Jim Turbert, host of Feel Free to Deviate, your new favorite podcast.
This episode is a sort of deviation, or maybe it's just an exploration of what the show is. My guest is Ed Mubarak, who is an old friend of mine. We've known each other since high school, and we've lived together, and we played in bands together, and other stuff like that. He's a super smart guy. He's very well read, and he's a great musician. Though we didn't talk about it, I believe he has a degree in journalism, and he's trained as a recording engineer, but he fails to meet most of the standard definitions of success. Like me, he's currently unemployed, and his last job was in a bagel shop, which is not something that most people aspire to, even if they love bagels. We talk at length about career and identity, as well as the shortcomings of the system. We actually talk for over 3 hours, and if I had to guess, I'd say that at least 20 minutes of that was laughter. Maybe it was old, white guy-centric, insider joke laughter, but we had a good time while talking about some uninspiring stuff. And as usual, there were a few digressions. I'll leave a few woefully out-of-date links to Ed-related stuff in the show notes. Those are his words, not mine. He's not particularly good at selling himself, which is something I can relate to. But I'm working on it. Anyway, if you have audio needs in the greater Los Angeles area, you should look him up. He did half of the audio for this episode, but I probably janked it when I put everything together. Anyway, give this guy a job. Speaking of jobs, you should give me one too. I'm still unemployed, but I've been thinking about taking a barista class so I can at least work someplace with free coffee. I assume baristas get free coffee, but maybe that's presumptuous of me. Can't get high on the supply. I figure a part-time barista position will buy some groceries while allowing enough free time to make this podcast better. Can always be better. That said, I think it's starting to gel. A bit. It's doing something. Speaking of something, you may want to check out at Feel Free to Deviate on Instagram. I've been amusing myself by making promotional clips. I can't say it's effective, but I do enjoy doing it. I suppose I'll have to work on that too. Like life, this entire endeavor is a work in progress. Without further ado, this is episode 5, featuring Ed Mubarak.
This is how you're going to do a segue.
Speaking of interesting, today I got Ed Mubarak here on the mic in the studio. We're talking a little bit about the past. We're reminiscing. We're getting a little nostalgic. But that's not why we came here. That's not why we're meeting up.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
I'm good.
I
don't know what I do on the show yet. I'm trying to figure it out. I've been getting feedback.
You yourself are feeling free to deviate.
I wouldn't call this particular recording session a deviation because we didn't even start on topic. So there has been no deviation. We've just been conversing.
Just
be quiet for a second.
Okay.
Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Ed Mubarak, and I'm trying to teach myself to say my name Ed Mubarak, because it makes more sense visually, and I guess that's what I do. I don't do anything right now. I am unemployed. I suck at the teat
dude,
of Uncle Sam. I don't know what I shall be doing for employ in the future.
Okay, and I can relate to that. Now, this is the fifth episode that I've recorded, and I assume that if anyone has made it this far, they already know that I am unemployed. I'm not sure if having you as a guest is the best move. We're trying to figure out what people consider success, what people consider failure, perhaps. We're trying to find out what people do, like how people get to where they are. We're trying to figure out if they had a clear idea of where they wanted to end up, if they had goals along the way. And I'm thinking that you and I might be a little too similar to inspire anybody. Or maybe it'll be a cautionary tale.
Is the goal to inspire?
I don't think initially it was a goal of mine. But yeah, I want to figure out how people do what they do and what makes them make the decisions that they make. Mm-hmm. But I suppose in order to do that, you need to talk to a lot of different people. And so far, I've talked to mostly arts people,
right?
Which makes sense. A hugely diverse group.
Yeah, it's funny. It probably is and then also isn't in important ways.
Yeah. Right? To the casual listener, they might be thinking, oh, dude, another art school person. What the? I don't need that. I can't relate to art school people. But you know what the thing is? People just write off art school. Art school's pretty great. It's kind of...
I would go to art school today if I could.
I don't know if I would, but I definitely think that it's as valid as any other undergraduate degree, except for maybe a specific undergraduate degree that trains you for a very specific thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a deepening debate about education in general. Right?
It is,
like,
especially post-COVID, now that everybody's at home doing their thing.
Should education be generalized? Should it be specified? Is it job training? Is it humanist training? Blah, blah, blah.
For 9 years, I worked for tech startups, and most of those guys had degrees, I guess, but some of them weren't even using them. You know, they had degrees in other things, whether it was art or design, and they were doing programming or one guy, I talked to this guy a couple of weeks ago, Bjorn, he has a computer science degree and he was the back end guy at Photomat.
To me, the idea that everybody should go to college is just like fucking crazy. I think there's all these people that we don't know what to do with between high school and being adults. And they're like, well, we better send them to college. I don't know. Otherwise, they're going to, once again, like with the baby boomers, like otherwise they're all going to come and take our fucking jobs. You know, I had actually this conversation with my mom while they were here visiting. And I was saying, I really wish I hadn't gone to college right out of high school. It wasn't right for me. It set me back years. It made me like deeply, deeply depressed. Like I'm pretty sure on a clinical level.
Dude, I know.
And they didn't know better. They didn't have any framework to have any other advice other than go to college.
It's kind of a paradox because if you're in high school and you're a smart guy, clearly you were in high school at the same time as I was. And
like a smart guy, huh?
We're both pretty smart guys.
Smart enough
to get by without doing jack shit. That's the problem with the educational system, I think. And I'm seeing it
sort of with my kids.
Like kids who are above the curve and kids who are below the curve.
Fucking lost.
Are lost. Yep. So like you've got someone who's kind of bright. You've got aptitudes for all kinds of stuff. But they don't know what to do with you. And you just end up being like, I can do whatever I want and get on the honor roll. And... Mm-hmm.
And
I'm
going to
graduate anyway. What do I care?
And then when you do have to try, you don't get involved
and you don't seize the reins. I mean, that's not true for everybody, but for certain personality types, obviously you and I feel the same way. There are plenty of people that I went to high school with and who, you know, from high school who were also bright kids who played the game a little bit closer and now they are rich.
Wait, we know rich people?
I know some rich people. Actually, some of the people who I know who are rich, I'm just like, really?
I feel like it was the negative aspects of it in high school came from two sides. Like the one side was, I don't have to try to do fucking anything. This is so easy. And it really was. And I'm not bragging. It was just like
easy. It's just the structure.
Because I was smarter than the people teaching me.
Sometimes,
you know. So there was that. And so then when you do have to try at something, you turn out to not have the tools to do so sometimes, right? And that's one end of it that is significant. The other end is if you are encouraged to excel, and this is what happened to me with math. I was just like better at math than other people in fifth grade. I was really pushed to like excel at math and do better. And so the focus becomes so narrow, just so narrow. And then like if it's something that you don't want to do, if you recoil at that at all, in my case at least, I was in fifth grade, I was in like my own math class in the entire school, right? Like everyone, there were two fifth grade classes. Everyone did the same shit at the same time, except for me. They gave me the book and they said, here's the book. Go at your own pace and you'll meet with Mr. Greco every couple days and you'll talk about math. Okay, great. And so it was easy for me, but also not interesting to me at all. And so what I did was I spent a few months staying exactly two chapters ahead of the rest of the school.
You got a system.
I had a system. It's so I could be ahead and be excelling, quote unquote, but also not, you know, like, what was I going to do? Like, what was I going to read the whole fucking book? And then like,
And then
the part that like, that I actually took more of, you know, I grew up in a small town. And so like for excelling, for being different, you are fucking ostracized. and you are taunted and you are fucking hated for that. You're hated for standing out in a lot of places.
But to and be so fair, always... Ed, you're kind of an asshole.
Totally fair. That is totally fair. And I'm sure I always have been. However, my parents, who grew up in small towns, should have understood. So you're like, so you're a fifth grader. How old are you in fifth grade? 10 or something?
Sure.
Right?
Say it.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe not super emotionally mature. Maybe. And so maybe. You're getting berated on one side for not working hard enough and excelling in a traditional manner of excelsion. And then you're getting berated on the other side by your peers for being show-offish and grandstandy and teachers petty and yada yada. If you're going to be in any kind of social order in which you care about other people's response to you, that was a no-win situation for me, which I think was very formative, obviously, because I still talk about it. Like a fucking loser.
I dream about it every night.
And the thing is, no adult that was encouraging me to do that had any ill will, had anything other than the best for me in mind. But there were all these ancillary things that came into play that they hadn't considered, and that happens. I'm sure you'll do it to your kids.
Oh, for sure. I can't wait to have that conversation someday.
When you're 80 and on your deathbed.
I'll be
and
then,
Ruby's
probably.
Like, here's 12 ways that you fucked me over. Oh my God, 40 years ago.
So no, I already know. I mean, I know what I'm working on. I'm going to try to talk to somebody about that. It's programmed into me. And I just have to, you know, I have to break the cycle, man. But anyway,
what do you
story.
Think is programmed into you?
What's that?
What do you think is programmed into you?
Behavioral things, mostly. Yeah. What do I think is programmed into me? It's
just if I knew, oh, so I wouldn't still be programmed, would I?
It's mostly very little to do with education. It has mostly to do with interpersonal dynamics. I get a little testy when people don't grasp things. And when you're dealing with children, they don't always grasp things.
You know, the thing with children is they're just a bunch of fucking idiots.
I mean, by definition.
That's a fine balance because kids get what they get. And arguing with a kid assuredly make you feel like an idiot also. But one of the things that happens to me a lot, and I'm sure you have encountered this too, is when you're trying to explain something to someone, like say it's a coworker. Or a boss, and you're trying to explain something, and it's just like they're not getting it, but you know they could get it. They just really don't want to because it would cost them some time or some money or some effort if they acknowledge that what you were saying was correct. To me, that's a very frustrating, pernicious thing.
I can see how that would be frustrating, but that's not really what happens with kids, I don't think.
No, with kids.
I think they straight up just don't understand.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. Kids. Maybe they do. Maybe actually, you know, sometimes I think Doris understands a little bit more than she's letting on.
which one's Ruby's the older one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She's kind of a space cadet. She's pretty funny. They're completely different kids. It's hilarious.
That's my life advice. Just care less about shit.
That's kind of what I'm trying to do. Let it go. Yeah. I just got to let it go. Also be more accepting of other people and their shortcomings and my shortcomings. Why don't you tell me? Why don't you tell me about your relationship with success? What does success mean to you?
Those are obviously two different questions.
What does success mean to you?
Success to me just means literally just happiness. And I know that's like a facile
definition. It's not. It's fine. Like, I totally accept it.
Yeah. If someone is happy, they are successful.
In that term, what does happiness mean? Because whenever someone asks me, are you happy? My standard answer is, of course I'm not happy. Nobody's happy.
Right.
That could be a different discussion. I think that when people say happy, they often mean general contentedness. To me, happiness is a peak in emotion and not the baseline.
Yeah. The contentment and happiness are obviously confused all the time. And I don't, maybe I do mean contentment. Rather than happiness, actually. In a super Americanized context, right? Success is I don't have to worry about money and I do something that I feel matters to make my living. I guess that's it.
Okay. So that's what you think? Or that's what the average person... Because I'm not sure that the average person cares about doing something that matters.
Right. I think that's what I think in my Americanized context.
Matters to whom is another question as well. Does it matter to you or does it matter to somebody else?
That's what matters to me. I see people that worry about money all the time that have tons of fucking money and it drives me insane.
Right.
You know, it's just like, dude, you have the main ingredient to the recipe of happiness and you're ignoring it and you're pissing on it and you're wasting it.
Right.
It drives me crazy. I don't know why people do that, but they do.
I was on a walk with my friend Florian earlier today, and he was talking about how he visited some relatives. He said he felt like an alien whenever he goes there because they're super alpha business guys. Like it's a family. It's his brother-in-law or something. Yeah, I don't know how he's related to them. But he goes there and they talk about, you know, their investments and the new car. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that per se. It's just I personally can't relate to it. I actually think there are some things wrong with that mindset, but that's another discussion.
I do too. Well, but I don't know if you can have one discussion without the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, maybe that's too far off the track, but yeah, I think like Kelly's family, I think, is a little bit like that.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, what are you all doing, man? Like, okay, be successful. I think that like, some of this for me and maybe for you as well ties into what we were talking about where shit was easy when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, well, yeah, dude, I can like be an empty headed prick and be successful at business too if I had wanted to.
I don't know if you know I what could, I mean? It's like, but go ahead.
But you know that you had the capabilities to. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's sure,
like,
sure.
It doesn't, like, what these people are doing doesn't seem to me like an achievement. In any sense.
No, but it's like, a lot of money. And that's what, if that's what your goal is, then you're good. So like what Florian was saying was that the rationale of his brother-in-law or whoever this guy was that he wanted to make sure that there was something for the family when he was gone. And Florian was saying, yeah, but don't you think it's a good idea to be around and spend time with them while you're here? So what's success? I don't know. Like, yeah, he's got a Tesla and he makes a lot of money, evidently.
That's what happened to Kelly's dad. He had like an office furniture business, but they were high end. They were doing a lot of, I think he was like one of the only regional distributors for Herman Miller for a while or something like that.
Nice.
He did really well and he sold the business and he retired when he was 40.
Dude, that's amazing. That's success if you ask me.
Dude, right?
And also nice furniture.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. But he got fucking awful cancer and died.
Probably would have gotten that anyway, though.
70. Yeah, I'm not saying he got cancer because he was successful.
But
I'm
the saying time, that, like, yeah, the time.
Well, it's what you were just saying. He worked so hard to do this thing, to do something for his family, and then he was just fucking gone anyway.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. And he didn't get to see Kelly have her career. He didn't get to see his son be a brand manager for a cool ass company and be really successful and be really happy. He didn't get to see the house that he bought. He didn't get to see these people's fucking lives.
Right.
And
which is, yeah, that's like, that's what you're doing it for, right? Or is it?
That's what people do it for. I don't know. I don't know. Cause I'm not driven that way. And I also don't have kids and probably never will. There's some piece in the normative equation, like missing for me anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Your alternative.
I think I actually am.
Dude, you're Gen X.
I'm super Gen X. I'm actually the very end of Gen X. You're a year older than me, right?
I was born at the last week of 1975, so I'm like nine months older than you.
Yes.
Yeah, 10, totally. 9. You're September. 9, yeah.
September.
So let's say 20, 10 because you're the end of September, right?
Yes. We're like the very tail end of what I think they consider Gen X.
Yeah, like I don't know Sturm what the date cutoff is, but I'm pretty sure that 1975 is part of Gen X. I think that the end of the 70s is the end of Gen X.
Okay.
I think. Okay. I don't know.
It. I mean, obviously.
And you know what? I don't give a shit.
Target. I know.
I know that I identify with Gen X more than I identify with whatever the next one is, which I guess is millennials, or is that?
I don't know. Gen Z? Is that a thing?
Sure. Yeah, Gen Z is now, though, isn't it? Zoomers? Don't they call them Zoomers?
Oh, I don't even know. I don't know.
There's a lot to know, Ed.
This is amazing content.
The kids.
Two guys like talking about shit they don't know about.
Talking about generations. It's fascinating. let's talk about pre-imperialist
Caribbean agriculture.
I want to talk about the great banana famine. Yeah. So do you have goals then? Like, if did you have goals ever?
I think I had wishes, but not goals.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel. Like, look, man, if I could go back and be 20 again, like, I would do a lot of shit different.
Of course. Everybody says that.
And everybody says that. And of course, but like, I really would, man. I would.
If I could go back, first
of
all,
more stuff.
First of all,
fuck a lot more chicks.
Dude, totally inappropriate, but maybe.
Is this a family cast?
I was going to say I would invest in the stock market.
I'd go back, and then I'd go back again so I could invent time travel. Then I'd go back, I'd kill baby Hitler, I'd invest in the stock market, and then I'd invent steroids, and I'd break Babe Ruth's home run record before Barry Bonds.
No, I would invest in the stock market.
I would probably do that. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we were talking before about, you know, me pissing and moaning about my dad being a fucking jagoff.
But hello, he's got Corey Mubarak.
Hey, Corey Mubarak. Hey, Corey. But that's part of the thing that drives me fucking nuts. He's like, "Oh, you got to play the game, man. And you got to rig the system for you, man.
Rig the system."
I'm like, dude. If that's what you think is important, you are fucking terrible at it. Like, you, all you do is worry about money. You have no money. You have no property. You have no, like, fucking security. Like, if you cared about that, you fucking failed. Like, so shut up about it. It's ridiculous. Like, it would have been nice.
10-4.
If economic security is important, it would have been nice when I was younger to have somebody be like, hey, maybe when the housing market dips, buy a house.
Maybe
that's a good idea. Maybe when you're working full time and saving money when you're 19, instead of saving money to pay for fucking college again, maybe buy a house. Maybe that would be worthwhile. But there was nobody there with that advice for me, because it's not what my parents did, or I think their generation did. Dude, they lived on credit their whole fucking lives, and they continue to do so. They paid off their house, I think, like a week later. Took out a home equity loan. To, like,
why? Why?
To redo the kitchen or some
dude,
shit.
For real?
Right? Just fucking unfathomable, right?
First of all, their kitchen was fine.
I agree. I liked it much better before. But, you know, that's how that generation, quote, made its living on fucking debt. All debt financed. And then they look at us. You know, I'm not saying your parents look at you or my parents look at me, although mine do. But like, that generation looks at our generation and be like, why are you such fucking failures? Why are you fucking broke all the time?
I don't think my parents look at me at all.
Wow. Time to start a new podcast.
For real. I might start a network. It's called the Jim Turbert's Whiny Problems Network. Poor Jim.
Poor Jimmy Turbert. All alone across the choppy gray Atlantic Ocean.
I'm very misunderstood.
Aren't we all, though? Do you want to talk about that then?
No. I want to talk about goals. I want to talk about goals because I don't feel like I ever had any goals. Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about before. I can say for myself that one of the good things that came from my upbringing is that, yeah, I'm not afraid to work. I'll just work.
Sure.
I've always just done anything that I needed to do. Right now, that is not the case because I'm trying to be a little bit more picky.
Right.
It's not working out.
But you've been out of work like what, 3 months?
Six.
Still.
Six.
That's not that long today.
Feels like, dude, long.
Things are so different than when we grew up.
There's also a global pandemic. I know, but I'm just trying to justify the fact that nobody wants to hire me.
I wasn't meaning to not hear your feelings.
It's okay. I was trying to make a point.
Yes.
About goals.
You've never been afraid to work. You're trying to be pickier now.
I'm trying to be picky now. Like, it's not working out. Like, I never figured out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I still don't really know. And when people ask me, what do? I just list responsibilities from previous jobs. I went to school for photography, but I suppose I could become a freelance photographer. I am a perfectly adequate photographer.
You should probably do that.
Probably should, but I don't like it. I like photography.
You should not do that.
I like working on art projects. I like photographing my family and my children. I like photographing crazy stuff that I see on the streets. I enjoy looking at other people's photography of various types.
You can be like Sally Mann, but for dudes.
Nah, yeah, I could. But for dudes.
I was not slandering Sally Mann.
Your job is finding jobs.
I know. If you're freelance anything. That's something that I'm struggling with right now, because I'm never going to be happy working for somebody else, I don't think. It's exactly that. It's like your job then, if you don't want to work for somebody, is to fucking find work all the time.
Yeah.
Your job, maybe it's being a photographer. Maybe it's being a fucking audio editor. But that's not your job. Your job is like managing your SEO. And it also, because of the tech involved now, it has nothing to do with a neighborhood or community or personal relationships or blah, blah, blah. It's like, can you get hits, man? Like, it's just that. Also, I don't know what it's like for stuff that you have competencies in, but if you go on like Fiverr or whatever and see like what are people charging for audio editing, it works out to $2 an hour. It's insane.
It really is.
It's insane. Looking
at things, people are constantly recommending going to Fiverr because you need graphic design and you need some sort of audio or something. Just go to Fiverr. It's really cheap. And that's the thing. You're talking about someone composing music for your project and you're paying them practically nothing.
People that you know have suggested that to you?
No, the articles. Google searches and whatnot.
I mean, the problem with those articles is they're designed to further a cheapening content creation industry.
Oh, they're awful. Right? One of them is awful.
And you literally know how to do all of the shit.
Exactly. It's nice to see an outline. You should actually just start your own business doing it. Once you kind of scan through it, the article's maybe 700 words long, could be 200. It could be a bullet point list.
Yes.
And they turn it into 700 to 1,000 words. I was listening to an audiobook recommended by another podcasting maven, Tim Ferriss. He has this book.
I know the name.
He's the 4-hour work week or whatever. But he has.
Oh, that fucking guy.
Well, he has a podcast and he made a book of
chapter one, trick people into buying your book.
No. He's interviewed all these famous and successful people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, Laird Hamilton, all these dudes who are at the top of whatever field they're in. And he tries to say, these are like habits of these titans. And
the 7 habits of highly successful people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a formula. It's been done before. Yes. But it's interesting, but it's also hilarious because half the stuff is they buy the craziest groceries and they work out for like 7 hours a day and they do all these crazy exotic workouts. Dude, I have a family. I'm not going to work out for 6 hours.
You can look at it like with a positive example or a negative example, right? Like look at someone like Prince, mm-hmm. who is fucking amazing. Guess what Prince did for 22 hours a day? Like, he tried to be famous. Like, that's all he fucking did and all he fucking cared about, man. And I'm glad he did because we get to listen to Prince, right?
That's true.
But, like, that was all he worked on ever all the fucking time.
Goals.
And that's my positive example.
Goals.
Well, so actually, when you were saying before about when you were younger, you're saying I didn't want to know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I think that I was similar. But I also think that that is a kind of unevaluated, poisonous attitude that we're raised with.
Ah.
A, that you should know what you want to be at any point. And B, that what you do to make a living is identifying to you. I think that becomes corrosive.
It's hard to escape, though.
It is hard to escape.
Especially because of how big a part of your life it becomes.
I am here in LA and like Kelly has friends who like do cool shit and work in museums and own art galleries. And they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I work at a bagel shop and now I want to fucking kill myself. Me feeling that way is stupid and irrational, but I definitely feel that way.
I can imagine. Yes. Well, yeah, of course, because your thoughts go to like, not that it's below you. It's just that there's an aptitude and you can be the best bagel guy.
Well, no. My point is, though, that it's that it defines you is what's corrosive. My point was to agree with you that, like, yes, I am aware of it and still do not escape it. Like, it's so pervasive. It's all around you. It's like It's literally everything, every mode of introduction to any character in your life, real or fictional, is presented that way. What's LeBron James? LeBron James is the greatest basketball player. What's Kelly Boss? Kelly Boss is a art conservationist. You know what I mean? It's like everybody, like I've actually started when I meet people trying to really, really, really not ask them what they do for
me
as
too.
Long as possible. Because I just don't want to further that.
I don't want them to ask me.
As long as you make it more selfish, that's what's important.
Fair enough. Again, it's about me and my issues.
This is a JT show. It's about JT. But yeah, I don't want to talk about what I do because it's fucking nothing. And then I also don't want to further the social acceptability of work identitarianism. I don't know what you'd want to call it, but
I'll call it that. That sounds pretty good.
Career identitarianism.
When you have kids and you're hanging out at a school all the time, believe me, you have to talk about it way more. Every time your kid has a new friend, what do you talk about? Like, oh, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. It's so tedious and so tiresome. And then you tell them, like, I worked as a support guy. That is a very broad area. And it can be the annoying guy that you're on the phone with, or it can be someone who knows what they're doing. And I always feel the need to explain that I'm not a dumb support guy. Like, I feel like I have to validate.
Can I make a suggestion to you?
Please do.
I think you should tell people that for most of your life, you've been a content creation technologist.
I've been marketing myself as content creator, but technologist. I don't think that technologist.
Nobody gives a fuck about the creator. That's one of the things, man. Like, having a podcast isn't awesome. Knowing how to run a podcast is awesome. You know what I mean? It's like, where do the fucking wires go, man?
I know how to run this recorder.
Right.
Arguably.
And I mean, so you're at school talking with these other parents and like, of course you start talking about what you do for a living. And it is empty and it is hollow, but it's also to avoid, what else would you talk about? Would you talk about politics? Would you talk about religion? Would you talk about the generationally transmitted hopes and fears of a fucking depression era grandmother? Like, what would you talk about?
Well, right now, the number one conversation that pops up, I'm going to say there are two that pop up. One for me specifically, because a lot of the parents know that I am out of work. How's it going? Which is a question that I don't like because it's not going well.
Jim,
then I make the mistake of telling people that I'm going to an interview, and then I have to talk about not getting the job after the interview.
Jim.
Yeah.
How are you really?
I'm so good. I'm so good. And that's what I just say. I'm really good.
Well,
I'm
okay,
super
but
good.
Let me ask you a question. Do you not want to talk about those things because you're embarrassed or because it's boring or because it's vapid or
it's a little bit of embarrassment, mostly the other stuff though. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't care. I want a job because I need money.
Yeah.
It's not like I've never, all right, I'll say this. When I work, it kind of almost doesn't matter what I'm doing. I always imagine myself being in some sort of a competition and I'm winning that competition. When I used to make ice cream, I used to
I was just like 30 seconds ago, I started thinking about you making ice cream.
When I used to make ice cream, I used to imagine myself at ice cream making competitions and I was winning.
I remember standing on a sidewalk with you in Northampton, Massachusetts, and we were talking. We may have been at the Harrells. I'm not sure.
I think we were.
And you saying, and we were talking about making ice cream and you saying, I think I might be the best. And me turning and looking at you, and before I say anything, you looking at me and saying, in the world. And I was just like, I think that's a fine thing to think. That sounds like a good work strategy to me, man. You know, like if it keeps you engaged and it keeps you like, I guess that works.
Just go for it, man.
Just go for it, man. Just be the best. So I think you bring up, when we're talking about like happiness and like doing something that matters and money and yada, yada. One thing that I do know is doing a job just because I need money, which is most jobs, makes me actively unhappy.
Okay.
I cannot stop thinking about how it's just a pointless endeavor just to get a table scraps worth of fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what makes me happy, but I know that that makes me fucking unhappy.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I always tried to work in a field where I feel like I can make a difference. Sure. Ice cream excluded. Although I was...
I think I can make a plausible argument that that was your most positive contribution to the world.
I'll accept it. But I feel like when I was working at the school, that was good because I was helping people learn things that they potentially could
get some enrichment through.
And when I worked for the website companies,
that was a really good job.
I'm helping people present their work in the best way possible. Whatever. I'm relieving stress. I'm although there are a couple people out there who would probably say that I caused them more stress than I relieved, but there's like five people maybe.
So goes life.
Yeah.
It seemed like the Wesleyan, right?
Wellesley.
God, I knew Wesleyan wasn't right. It seemed like that was a really good job for you. It seemed like you enjoyed the layout there.
It had its moments, and there were aspects of it that were amazing.
Yeah, and that's where you did the radio show, right?
It just got old, and there were things going on, and my position, it was a weird one because I was working in the art department, but I was employed by the IT department, and there was push and pull. I wanted more money. I felt like I was being taken advantage of. And all of that was proven when I left and they made three new positions to replace me that were paid more than what I was making. I was pretty upset about that.
Yeah. Yep. That's upsetting.
But, you know, whatever. It's all water under the bridge at this point. One of the reasons we moved here is because I was sick of my job.
Was that where you were working right before you moved to?
It was.
Okay. I had lost track of the timeline, but.
Yeah. But at that point, I didn't have any gold and I just fell into that. And it was kind of one of those things. In a way, I did vaguely have a goal for that sort of thing because I really thought it would be cool to be a lab guy, a photo lab guy. And that was like sort of my gateway in because I knew wet darkroom stuff and I knew nonlinear digital video editing.
Boom. I had wanted to ask you earlier if you thought you had had a goal when you started art school. To me, it seems logical that anyone that goes to art school, their goal is to be an artist.
Art school was the goal. I had financial issues at UVM and I had to, because we talked about this before, how people are kind of, they're just, you have to go to school. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go to school. And I borrowed a ton of money. Then through this channel or that, the money fell through and I didn't have transcripts and I couldn't go back for my second year. And I had to figure out what I really wanted to do. And I decided I want to go to film school. We had the internet, but it was a very early state. So I went to the library and got that thick ass book of all the colleges and college programs in the US that they published every year. And I looked for film schools and I looked for the cheapest film school. I don't know. Maybe there was a way to cross reference tuition, but the cheapest school in America with a film program was Massachusetts College of Art. Maybe it wasn't the cheapest, but
it's one of the few state.
It's the only
state-run art schools.
It's
right?
The only autonomous state art school. Like the state university system has art schools, but it's the only autonomous art school that is state-run in America. So if you were a Massachusetts resident at the time, it cost $5,000 as opposed to University of Vermont, which was $21,000. And then you start talking about private schools, and they cost even more. Going to art school was the goal. It was a solution to a problem.
The problem was not being in school, right?
Like, what's that?
The problem was not being in school, it sounds like.
Yeah, because I still had this idea in my head that I needed to be in school.
Right.
But I also thought, what do I want to go to school for? Because I'm up here at University of Vermont just dicking around with liberal arts classes. I took some cool classes, but you know, who the hell cares about the history of alcohol in America? Who cares?
Well,
it's pretty interesting, by the way.
My actual perfect profession, like if I had done things right, I would have gotten a history degree and I would be a community college history professor.
That would be cool, right?
That would be fucking the best.
You literally make a difference in that position.
Literally make a difference. I'm 1,000% in support of the community college.
It's the best.
Whatever that is.
It's the best.
It's the best. I could do things I was interested in. You know, like I am interested in that stuff. I think like liberal arts education is fucking awesome. I don't know why people poo-poo it so much. You know,
it's well, because like, it doesn't seem to have an end result. It's like if you go and learn to be a CPA, then you have a job
problem.
As a CPA at the end. If you get your MBA, you can just slide your way into
doing who fucking knows what.
Right? Yeah, well, that's the thing. Most of the people who do that don't care. They're in it for the security and the insurance. Right. They're employable. When you go and you get a degree in photography from the Massachusetts College of Art, you're basically unemployable. If you go and you get a liberal arts degree from any of the fine universities in the United States, you're kind of unemployable. It's a lot of hard work and it's a really valuable exercise and you learn a lot and you meet a lot of friends and you make some connections, but it doesn't really give you a lot to show at the end of it. It makes you a literate person.
Well, I mean, so you're kind of like highlighting the perversity of the
system. I am.
Dude, why should you have to go to fucking college?
I don't know.
To be employable? It's ridiculous. Like, we could teach everyone in America how to read and write and wire their fucking house for electricity and be a carpenter.
That's good.
There's plenty of goddamn time in high school. How much time did we waste in high school?
Dude, I wasted
walking
so
the fuck
time.
Around hallways.
I wasted
shit.
About 70% of my time in high school.
Exactly.
At least.
And like, people aren't stupid. Like, people are stupid and they also aren't stupid. Not everyone can do fucking physics.
No.
Right? But like, most people can learn the shit they need to do stuff in their house and community. Like, I'm actually in favor of university, air quotes, should be liberal arts. Like, read about Lottie and fucking Da, and that's great. And then
I
there
like
should
their
be
work.
Specialized and then there should be specialized training schools for actual shit that you need to be specially trained for. And they should teach us probably 3 to 4 times more than what they teach us in high school. Because it's just asinine. But that's all. That's something, though, that the pandemic really highlighted. It's like when you get people here in America, I don't know what it was like where you are, but they'd go to PTA meetings screaming and yelling about how they need to reopen schools. And the reason they need to reopen schools, it's not so their kids can get educated. It's not so their kids can get socialized. It's so that these parents can go back to work.
Yeah,
and so all these, and it's all
I
these
definitely
fucking people,
felt that, by the way.
I'm sure you did. And I absolutely empathize with it. But it's all these free market, goddamn quad driving general contractor yahoos.
Quad driving.
Right? Fucking yahoos being like free market, being like America, man. Fucking stamp bootstraps, man. Oh, by the way, nanny state. Can you watch my kids every day so I can go to work? That guy. Hey, that guy, fuck off. It just highlights the absurdity of it all.
That guy has goals, though.
Oh, man. Does that guy have goals?
I think his goal is to get a quad.
Bro, he's got a quad.
His goal is to have a couple cars and a nice
garage.
He's
got a quad. He's got a boat. He's got a boat launch.
I would like a nice garage. I don't even have a car.
Yeah, I'd like a nice garage. That guy's goals are met. He has what he needs. The plumber in large, small town Missouri.
Sweet gig.
That puts his boat on the Ozarks on the weekend.
Beautiful
makes
there.
Makes like fucking $150,000 a year. Maybe his wife has a job. He's got 2 kids, 3 kids. He doesn't want to think too much about difficult subjects. He wants to watch a little football on the week. You know what I mean? Like, that guy met his goal when he was 26. I'm painting with, like, obviously a ridiculously broad brush, right? Like,
that is like, pretty broad brush. And it might be offensive to some people.
That's why.
There's nothing wrong with that. It takes all types.
I'm not saying, like, people who do that don't have thoughts, but I'm saying, like, having that lifestyle appears to be the goal for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, that's not a goal for me. I remember going back to Winstead a lot, meeting up with people. I don't want to make a disparaging remark, but people that, you know, didn't have a lot going on.
Right.
But they're, you know, early on in the time after you leave and then come back and visit your parents or whatever, you know, you go pick up a pizza at Kent Pizza.
As one will.
And you bump into somebody. They're like, yeah, I got a house and and a family and all this stuff. I'm like,
right.
You have a house? I'm renting a really crappy apartment in Boston and it costs twice as much as your mortgage.
Right.
And I got nothing. But dude, I've read way more books than you.
That matters, goddammit. There's this double thing though, right? Where having the house and the job and the kids is seen as this like version of success, but the whole system is designed to guide every single person into that vision of success.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have the house and the kids and the stable job, blah, 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 you're seen as a failure. The whole system is designed to make people do this like very normative thing. And yet it's seen as successful when you achieve that thing that you've been guided to do by the entire system the entire time. And if you don't do that thing, that's what's seen as a failure. Which, you know, I can see an argument for, because if the whole world is trying to get you to have a goddamn job and buy a house and you somehow manage to not do that, it's like, well, something went wrong somewhere, I guess.
Is the whole world trying to get you to do that?
Yes.
I think that it might be. Am I radicalizing?
I think I may be radicalizing you over Zoom, ironically enough.
I'm
going to take this techno corporate overlord and fucking use their weapons against them, man.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the whole world is there's a really interesting guy. I recently become hip to this dude, Mark Fisher, who wrote about some things that you may care about and some things that you may not care about. Like, one of his big thoughts is called capitalist realism. The structures around all of this stuff that we do, it's so ingrained in our lives, in our communication, and in our ideology. It's just everything about us that, like, envisioning a world without capitalism is just, like, unfathomable to
most
people.
It really is.
Yeah. And so I think it's a really valid point. When I was reading a little about that, I was just like, oh, this explains a lot of just confusion and frustration, where it's like you don't even have the fucking language. Like, you'll have conversations with people. I'll have conversations with my parents, or I'll have conversations with, like, well-intentioned people that I work with. And you're trying to explain something, and they're like, well, but it's just this other way. And you're trying to find a way to say, like, it doesn't have to be this way, but you just can't find the fucking mechanism to explain that it doesn't have to be the way that it is.
It's programmed.
It's very programmed, I think. His other really cool idea, big idea, is called, you can Google it, I think the essay might come up. It's called The Slow Cancellation of the Future. And it's related to capitalist realism. It's related to neoliberalism and, like, commodification of culture. But basically, like, how we live now in the arts, particularly music and film, he talked about a lot, in just a state of constant nostalgic reiteration. And there really hasn't been very much new. The way I heard about this was I was listening to Chuck Klosterman on a podcast about the movie The Doors.
What?
I know, right? There's a...
I like all those things that you're talking about.
There, if you look up on whatever, on your podcast provider of choice, The Rewatchables, The Doors, it should come up. It's a Ringer Network thing. But Klosterman was the guest on it. And that's where I heard him. He was talking about the slow cancellation of the future. Instantly, this made so much sense. He was kind of describing what Fisher had said, where it's like, if you were in 1995 and you went back to 1965, 30 years, and played the music of 1995 for those people, like, their fucking heads would explode. They'd be like, what the fuck? It'd be like, there'd be just infinite newness and all these things that they never even imagined that they could hear before, right? If you went from 2025 to 1995 and played them the music from 2025 and 1995, they'd be like, yeah, this sounds like what we're listening to today. Because it fucking is.
Mm.
Like, it's sonically so similar. There's very little true... I want to say aesthetic innovation, but that's not the right way to put it. But, you know, I feel like it would be a subject that would interest you.
Yeah, for sure. Perhaps. Just a note, a slight deviation from the topic that we've been doing a pretty good job of sticking to, I have to say. most of the changes, I think, in contemporary music have come from production. I think things are bassier now. I say that because I listen to a lot of older recordings. Classic rock recordings are nowhere near as bassy as contemporary music, especially if you listen to contemporary electronic music, which I listen to. I dabble.
I thought you were an old man.
I get out there. Can I just share with you some current recent listening things? You might be surprised. You might not.
Sure.
Well, this afternoon, I listened to the Pixies because I'm trying to. that's not much of a surprise. I listened to that because my children. I don't like the direction they're going.
Mostly
in.
The one that you like better than the other, though.
I like both of them. they're both so great. I love them so much. But anyway, what I listened to recently was a Moon Duo. That's kind of a classic rock vibe.
Is this all on Spotify?
I use Tidal.
Okay, fair enough.
Goat. I don't know if you know them. They're like Swedish hippies. They're pretty dope.
I don't. That sounds cool though.
Yeah, it's really good. I like the most recent Saint Vincent album. It's called Daddy's Home.
We should have a conversation about St. Vincent.
It's produced by that guy that produces everything.
Fucking hate that guy.
It's a great record,
fucking hate
though.
Jack Antonoff. No. Well, okay, listen. I haven't heard the record. I've heard I've heard, I think, three tracks off the record.
Uh-huh.
And compared to all of the other music being made in the world, it's pretty fucking good. Right? Compared to other St. Vincent music,
uh-huh,
it's pretty fucking boring.
I don't latch on to everything in her catalog. Like, I want to really love her, but
I
respect her and I think she's great. She's not on my list, you know?
Yeah.
I want to like her more than I do.
I liked her more when she was a musician instead of a...
Oh, I see. The marketing thing.
Attempting to be like a characterful style icon or some shit.
Yeah. All right. I can respect that, though. She's going for the money, whatever. I think it's a great record.
She's fucking brilliant. Get that cash, girl.
No, for real. And she is skilled. She's got it.
Yes. Yes. She shreds up a storm. There's a, I don't know the album or the song, but like she has a solo on a Sufjan record.
Uh-huh.
That's like, the solo is like 8 minutes long. It's just so fucking gnarly. It's so good. She's so good. That's the thing. That's one of my problems where it's like, she's so fucking good, man. And like, we need people that are so good and so different to continue being good and different.
But
and,
there like, are some. There
and
are
not
some.
Not be captured by fucking pop culturalism.
Yeah. Well,
just me.
Hold that thought. I'm going to list a couple other things. I've been listening to this band called Palberta, which is funny because I listened to them just because my mom's name is Alberta.
And that's funny. Yeah.
And then I listened to this band and it's a trio. It's a power trio with three women and it's awesome. They're really good. It just sounds kind of like late 90s indie rock, but they're,
you're sort of making Mark Fisher's point about the cancellation of the future.
No, I am. But the production is like, if you listen to a late 90s indie rock album, it's almost unlistenable because the recordings are so bad. This is recorded.
Some of them are very
awesome.
Bad.
It's so good. Like that was my point that the differences are in production. Like, yes, you could argue that like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles had the best production. I would say the Rolling Stones had really good production. At least, you know, like their late 60s, 70s stuff, like that production is just, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Very good.
But this sounds kind of like a late 90s indie rock girl band. They happen to be women. It sounds like,
I think we call them chicks today.
Anyway, it's awesome. You should check it out. Record's called Palberta 5000.
Nice.
There's a live Big Thief record out now.
She is fucking amazing.
Oh my God. It is so good.
This girl, she's actually like, to me, a girl. She's like 22 years old that I worked with at the bagel shop. Peggy. Yeah. Shout out, Peggy. I hope you're doing great. wherever you are. She hit me to Big Thief and Adrian Lecker. Like, what the fuck, dude?
It's so good.
So good. So good.
It's so good.
They almost literally don't make them like that anymore.
For real. This live thing is, it's, they're in a studio. It's like I think it was just a COVID thing. And they went in and they just did this stuff. And it's just them. You can hear them complaining about the mix and the headphones and stuff. And and it just sounds so good. It sounds so live. And it sounds so, I just want to be friends with these guys. Like, it is awesome. Angel Derridorian.
That's kind of like, it's like when... I feel like I'm like telling people to get off my lawn, but it's like when you hear songs and songwriting like that, and then you hear like the stuff that people listen to, you're like, why did anyone even make this? You know what I mean?
It's fair, like, enough.
And I mean, I know why they made it. They made it to fucking move units, you know?
Mm-hmm. Here's one. I love this record and I'm not sure why. I mean, I know why I like it, 'cause it's catchy and it just sounds different than things that I've listened to before. It says here that the release date was March 2018. And I read a little bit about it because, as the aforementioned music software, it gives me a little bit of a band blurb. It's just a bunch of, I don't know, I guess youngsters living in a house. They spend all day making music and they found their singer, who at the time in 2018 was a high school girl. And they just said, yeah, do you want to do this? And then she submitted a demo or whatever. And then they invited her to come and be part of their group. And it's weird. It's just weird. The lyrics are weird. She writes weird.
Are you going to tell me what it's called?
The band is called Super Organism. The production is ridiculous. It's like bassy and bubblegummy and
yeah.
It's like rock and pop, and sometimes it's kind of shoegaze. I don't even know, but it's great.
I think that, like, first of all, it's like amazing to find new shit that like you're into and excited to. That's like who doesn't love that, right? I think that production is the focus and has been the focus for many years now about music. And I think that that's a little bit to music's detriment because like you still need, I don't know if there are new ideas, but you still need fucking new ideas. You know what I mean? It's like I think that a lot of my feelings about like contemporary music and popular music and such has probably more to do with my own feelings about what I'm doing than the music itself.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm definitely at a point where I'm like, I don't know if I can fucking be interesting enough making music to make music.
I think I understand what you're saying.
I'm trying to do more stuff with field recordings and like putting those into kind of like, you know, soft synths and stuff like that. And like more manipulated and turning, basically, I guess it actually is a form of productionism. Doing something that for me at least is non-traditional. So it feels like you're working with new materials.
Mm-hmm.
And also materials that kind of give you some more constraints, which is nice. Music today. Those kids today.
Oh, all right. I'm going to say one more thing about music, and then we're going to try to get back on track. I know there was something I was supposed to remember, but I don't remember it. I'm just going to talk about this last record on the list of recently listened things. Do you know who Micaiah McRaven is?
No.
I think that you would dig this. The guy, I think he's from Massachusetts. I think he went to UMass. He like studied with Archie Shepp. He's in with all the heavy jazz cats, and he's a young guy. He's a drummer, but what he does is he goes out and he tours with improvisational sets, and he records everything, and then he cuts it up.
What do you mean he tours with improvisational sets?
He tours with a band and they do improvisational sets.
Oh,
or maybe it's not a band. Maybe it's different people in different locations. But he is touring. Right. He goes to venues. Plays a set of improvisational kind of hip-hoppy sound and jazz music and records everything. The main purpose of doing this is so he could get the raw material to sample himself and the band and cut it all up. And it's awesome. It is super, it is so cool.
Right.
But that I mean, it does still sound kind of like hip-hop. I mean, there's not a lot of, most of this stuff doesn't have vocals. Maybe some of it does. I don't remember.
Here's hoping not.
I don't think it does, and it's but it's really cool. It's not always the greatest recording, but like you say, you don't care about production. I mean, you do care about production, but
I do care about production, but
it shouldn't be the goal.
It ends up not mattering. It depends on what you're in it for, right, dude? If you want to sound like today's pop music, but you're doing something a little different, and it's stuff that people can't just hear or whatever. Then you're St. Vincent and you fucking get Jack Antonoff to produce your record. And like,
right.
It's perfect, perfect production, man. Perfect production.
It really is perfect. It sounds amazing.
It's really perfect. It sounds fucking great. You know,
guy's a genius. Evil genius, maybe.
He's very good. He's very good at what he does.
Might I don't be care an evil style, genius.
But on the other hand, you know, just like when I'm going through field recordings and trying to get like some samples out of whatever, like a little running water or some birds or blah, you know, like whatever, you know what people go into the woods and sample, right?
I do.
The thing that makes it what it really is, the thing that really gives it, that grabs me about certain things about it, is the atmospheres around it. One bird chirps and like that's a bird chirping, and like another bird chirps and that's a bird chirping, but they're both in different places. They're both in real spaces. There's anomalies surrounding the actual sound that are irreproducible. Every sound is different. It's a different philosophy of gathering materials, and it's a different purpose. As we've, I think, established, I don't really have a purpose anyway.
The moral of the story is...
I'm definitely not one of those people that's like, blah, blah, blah music today. Because like, there is more great, amazing music being produced today than at any time in history. I think that's obvious. And use all the tools and use all the technologies. And you know, like I'm positive about all that stuff, man. Like, go and do it.
Oh, and you mentioned Sufjan... And I have mixed feelings about that guy.
Sure.
I kind of hate his voice.
I think that's fair. I like I
I don't hate his voice. I just don't like it.
I'm not like super familiar with his catalog. Like some of his stuff I've heard, I really, really, really like. And some of it I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Me too. You know? And some of it I'm just like, I really can't listen to this. Not because it's bad, but because I don't like the way he sings sometimes.
That's fair.
He has one of the first things that I listened to by him that I liked was a Christmas record. He has a Christmas record.
That seems appropriate. That's funny.
It is awesome. It's a great Christmas record. And he did this other thing, like, and I just recently listened to this. Over COVID, I guess, he released this thing of like four records. I think that it's like, this is music you can trip to or something, because it's just like one of them is called Lamentations. One of them is called Revelations. And it's just like ambient keyboard music and shit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to have on in the background. But there was this other thing that he did like a year or 2 years ago with Bryce Dessner and Nico Muley. Mm-hmm. whose mom I worked with at Wellesley. anyway, it's called Planetarium, and it's all planet themed music. And it's an okay, it's a pretty good record, but the Jupiter song, the Jupiter song is the dopest thing. It's so good. The Jupiter song is my jam.
Nice.
I don't know if that's a Sufjan joint or a Nico joint or a Bryce Dessner joint, but it is
probably.
Oh my God. I listen to that thing over and over again. That song just gets me going.
Nice.
You should check it out.
Good to get going. I'll check it out.
Jupiter is the loneliest planet.
I honestly don't listen to that much music right now or the last like couple years. Like some stuff on vinyl. So it's mostly in the house we'll listen to records. And then like, you know, occasionally I'll like explore something on like the Spotify or whatever. And then be like, all right, cool. I should listen to more. I should keep myself more conversant with the materials.
Or maybe you should get some goals, slacker.
Maybe I should get some goals. Let's talk about more goals.
Have we exhausted the topic? I mean,
were we still pillorying the educational system?
That wasn't the intention, but that's kind of what happened, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Leaves a lot to be desired, turns out.
It does. And you know what? I'm going to say, I think I probably talked too much in this episode, but maybe that's a good thing.
I think that it's okay to talk more on your podcast, because if you're going to be guiding people into the minds and lives of others, they need to know who their guide is.
I'm not sure I'm guiding anybody, but I'm trying to figure some stuff out, and I'm trying to hopefully impart some knowledge or even inspiration, Ed.
Oh, right. Inspiration.
Inspiration
for other people. So when we were sitting here like, you know what sucks is the U.S. education system. Do you think anybody was inspired?
You're like, I'm not going to school. Fuck that shit.
Fuck the man, bro.
I'm going to be just like
Jim. Myself.
Middle-aged and unemployed. This guy's living the dream.
Look, man, seriously, though, like, I don't know if you've seen the horseshit rhetoric going on over here about like people not going back to work and stuff. It's like, there's too much social safety net.
The big quit or something.
Sure. I haven't heard that, but like that, I'm sure somebody printed that somewhere, right? People are basically coming out and saying like, we have to keep people fucking poor and afraid and starving so that they'll work our shitty jobs. How's that? Does that inspire anybody?
Right. Well, I wasn't really thinking so much about inspiration, but after I spoke with Dorona in the first episode, she said that she felt inspired just talking about her history. Like it made her want to go out and do some stuff.
She seems to have a history that one may find inspiring.
She does.
She's done some shit.
She has. She had a rough year, though. Corona's not good for performing artists.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
But I think she's probably pretty psyched that, because like the numbers are way down here and things, like they just announced that things are starting to open up again. Like all the venues are sending out their barrage of emails like, we're back, buddies.
No, it's good. I think it's going to be like a pretty ill year for people. Like I think everyone is going to just like cram in way too much shit. I will be very happy doing about a third as much as we did before the pandemic. I think
I'm one of those guys that it didn't really even affect that much.
We just went out to eat all the time.
Oh, I wish I did.
You should. You could.
Yeah, kind
of. You get, what do you, like 27 different versions of fried cheese there,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God. No, not even, if only. Like, it's the good places are really expensive, and it's a challenge.
Like, this last year, like, has actually been really radicalizing for me, like, more so than I had been in the past. I think that I had a lot of generalized critiques and dissatisfaction with things and with my place in them and my attitude towards them before. And now I think things are a little more focused and highlighted for me. You know, like, right now my goal is, like, to not have to slavishly fucking re-enter that system that I know is just, like, poisonous, you know? People act like the things that they do are neutral or innocuous, you know? And they're not. Everyone drives on the freeway here every fucking day for hours to go do a thing that literally no one needs them to do. It's insanity. I guess my most immediate goal needs to be to figure out if that's something that I want to engage with and try to change, or if I just want to fucking run away and hide. And I don't think one option is better than the other necessarily.
Which one would be success? Should we start a new conversation?
Yeah, right. wait, start recording now. Are you getting this? Running away and hiding, there is definitely an aspect to it that is non-successful, without a doubt. That doesn't mean it isn't a choice I or anyone else shouldn't make. But it's definitely, there's an aspect of selfishness and cowardice involved in that. At the same time, like, engaging and trying to fight, like, some kind of fight is just, like, madness and probably fucking pointless. And you know what I mean? It's just an exercise in futility. Kelly and I were watching something and they were talking about, like, climate legislation, blah, blah, blah. Mm. I just looked at her and, like, there's this whole, you know, knowledge industry, talking head industry, pundit industry about these climate mitigation and can our political system do the things they need to do to, and I'm just like, dude, like, look at the history of the US, look at what's going on today, look at human history. Do you think we're going to get our fucking shit together fast enough to not have
a
global fucking crisis?
Any
like,
day now.
There's no fucking way. There's no fucking way. So anyone that isn't, like, preparing for that future is just fucking kidding themselves, I think.
Well, that's why we're going to go to Mars. Mars is the answer.
Are you going to be Bezos' head lotion guy or what? Like,
I don't want to go to Mars, by the way.
I do not want. I think the idea of, like, going to another planet is horrifying.
It would be okay as long as you could breathe the air there.
This is the thing. You can't.
Did you ever see, what was that movie? Was it Total Recall?
Yeah. I actually just rewatched that, or part of it.
Oh my God. It's so
it's
good. Great.
It's an amazing scene. It's so good. It's fabulous.
Was it called a Quattro? A Quattro?
Oh, Quattro. Yeah. The guy and the guy.
The guy and the guy.
I was just thinking about the actual, like, when Arnold's, like, outside and his head's, like, all bulging and shit.
And it's so straight good. Up claymation.
So good.
It's so good. It is so good.
I was recently listening to something about Jaws, and they were having an actual conversation about if you could remake Jaws today, if he would still have, like, a mechanical shark. I'm just like, what is wrong with people? Like, it looks fucking great. Like, Jaws is one of, like, five perfect pop cultural movies.
Exactly.
Right?
Why would you,
like, Jaws,
that?
Silence of the Lambs. I'm sure there's some others. But, like, those two movies.
They remade Psycho.
Right.
Dude, with Vince Vaughn.
Slow cancellation of the future.
With fucking Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn's great.
I love Vince Vaughn.
I like him too. But, dude, what?
Just don't. Just don't do that shit. Just stop. Just fucking stop. One of my goals should be to be more positive.
All right. You know what? I'm going to say that that's the end, because success is one, knowing when to quit, trying to stay positive.
In no particular order.
That was it. I always like talking to him. And I hope you got something out of it too. I'm still catching up with the references he supplied during our conversation. It's a lot to think about. Keep in mind, there are a lot of different points of view in the world. I'm not saying you have to agree with all of them, but it's a good idea to listen to them and even investigate where other people are coming from. I'm going to try to get some other outspoken people on here soon, but I'm not sure how that's going to go. In fact, I'm not sure who the next episode is, so you'll be as surprised as me when it comes out. I have a lot of calls and appointments to make, so stay tuned. Also, stay tuned to @feelfreetodeviate on Instagram and Facebook. not doing that much with Facebook, but Instagram is on fire. You should go there. Follow me. Not me. At Feel Free to Deviate. I mean, you can follow me personally as well, but there are two different accounts. Now I've probably confused you. I'm sorry about that. Thanks for listening. Go to feelfreetodeviate.com and subscribe. And I'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks. Peace out.